Okay, we're talking about it's not always sin, bringing healing to those who suffer. One of the verses that we have emphasized in biblical counseling over the years is 1 Thessalonians 5:14. We urge you, brethren, admonish the unruly, encourage the faint-hearted, help the weak, and be patient with everyone. And I think sometimes folks have thought that biblical counseling was all about that first one. That is the word nuthetao. It's all about admonishing the unruly. It's all about confronting someone who is sinning. Well, that's not the only note on our piano. It better not be the only note on our piano. And here's a good example, a great verse that suggests that ministry can't be one size fits all. In fact, at an ANC conference a number of years ago, we took that particular passage and we divided up the plenary sessions using each one of the phrases in that passage. And honestly, it was one of my favorite night conferences from a plenary session perspective, because I thought that ended up just being a really nice way to talk about counseling from a variety of different perspectives. And people still give me a hard time because the phrase in that text that was assigned to me was the last one. Be patient with all men. And I think the folks who are organizing the conference thought, if we assign that to him, maybe he'll start doing it. And I wasn't then, and I'm really not now, but that's not the point of this session. It was funny, I was looking at an email, and our CFO just got off the phone with our banker, and we're doing some things in preparation for Faith West, and the last thing the banker said is, just tell Steve to be patient. That ain't happening, okay? I mean, it's not, but that's not what we're talking about here. But the point is that biblical counseling isn't a one-size-fits-all approach. And I do think at times we've tended to hit the sin issue so hard that we've not had a place for suffering, and I hope that we're going to do better in the days ahead. You are seeing more and more writing coming out on the matter of suffering. There's more and more good books being written by biblical counselors and others. We are in the process right now of doing a joint project. I don't know if you're familiar with the Biblical Counseling Coalition, but the Biblical Counseling Coalition is a group of leaders in the movement who are working together to try to build just synergy and friendship. And we actually have a contract with Harvest House. James McDonald is the general editor, and Bob Kellerman and I are serving as managing editors. But there's 40 different authors who are writing in that book. It's called Christ-Centered Counseling, and there will be a couple of chapters on suffering, because we want to be sure as we lay this out to the next generation, that's what the BCC is all about, is transferring truth in a cohesive way to the next generation. We want to be sure that biblical counseling is recognized as much for suffering as it is for sinning. Now, some of you have been around these conferences for a while, and you might say, well, then if that's the case, explain the word NANC. And I'm not really good at ignoring the elephant in the room, so let me just answer that question. I explain the word NANC, and this might be one of those times where we ought to put a sign on the front of the pulpit here. The views expressed here are not necessarily those of the management. But I think NANC may have a name problem. I mean, I'm just going to tell you that. I think that people involved in NANC, people who have been involved in nuthetic counseling, have always spoken about suffering. But I think we've said so much about sin, and we've emphasized nuthetic so much that I'm not sure that it wouldn't be a good idea to change that name. And so there is, I'm just going to tell you, there's at least talk among the folks in that organization, and I'm on their board, about whether or not that name is serving us well. Frankly, I'm not sure if you have to explain your name to people that you've got a particularly good name. And so we're talking about that. But I do know this, I have had the privilege over the years of knowing most of the leaders in the nuthetic movement, nuthetic counseling movement, personally. And I know all of them would agree with everything that I'm about to say to you. Whether or not that's been an emphasis or not, we certainly want it to be an emphasis in the days ahead. One of my goals in this session is that we would handle suffering the way Jesus would. And I don't say that in some sort of a trite fashion, but I love this particular passage speaking about the coming Messiah. Don't you love this? 700 years before Jesus came to earth, this is the kind of thing that was predicted about his ministry. A bruised reed he will not break, and a dimly burning wick he will not extinguish. He will faithfully bring forth justice. Or many of us probably memorized that or learned that in the King James Version. A bruised reed shall he not break, and here it is, the smoking flax shall he not quench. the suffering person. He's going to encourage the smoking flax. He shall not quench. He shall bring forth judgment and the truth. And that's the spirit that I hope characterizes our counseling. It's a deep sensitivity for those who suffer. To back up, perhaps, something else I love about Jesus is he does practice full disclosure in the sense that he explained that we would suffer. So for anybody who would say as they're suffering, well, I didn't sign up for this. You didn't read the contract. Because the Word of God is very clear. Here's a simple illustration of it. John 16:33, in the world you will have tribulation. That's upfront honesty. This side of heaven, believers of Christ will suffer. I do a lot of traveling, and a lot of my trips, in fact, I have several weeks in a row that are exactly like this, where we'll leave on Friday and get to some hotel somewhere and be to the teaching site by 5 and teach that evening and then jump back to the hotel and then be back in the morning at 8 and start teaching and then teach right up to the last minute. A lot of times they're racing me back to the airport so I can get back here late Saturday night. A lot of times I get back to Indianapolis very late on Saturday night. And then I do our 4 worship services on Sunday. That's just kind of my life. I'm used to that. And so when I am in a hotel, I sleep very, very soundly. And we were doing some training a couple of years ago out on the East Coast, Northeast somewhere. It was out in the middle of nowhere. And in part, we try to do training in places. That's one of the reasons we travel, is to go to places that don't have access to training. And so we were out in the Northeast somewhere. And we did what I just described. I mean, we had taught all evening, and I got back to the hotel room, and I just crashed. And my cell phone went off about 2 o'clock in the morning. People don't generally call me in the middle of the night to tell me that everything's going fine. That was certainly not the case here. It was my wife, and she told me that she had just received word about a fire that had occurred in the homes of one of our young members, a young husband and wife and 2 little kids. And it had been a tragic fire, and the husband had survived after trying to rescue his family, but had survived alone. And his wife and his 2 little children perished in that fire, and he had been burned as a result of trying to help them. Well, I got on the phone, tried to change my flight. It wasn't going to happen because I was just so far out in the middle of nowhere. The flight I was actually on was the first, so I couldn't even change my teaching schedule, so I had to opportunity, privilege, responsibility of going and trying to teach in that situation, even though I had that on my mind. And then I can still picture myself being in the airport, finally reaching this man and communicating with him on the phone, and then setting up a time when I could meet with him as soon as I got back. Then, you know, on Saturdays when I'm flying back, I'm going over the sermon for the next day, which has already been prepared before I would ever travel. So I'm looking at what I had prepared to do for Sunday. That wasn't going to work. So I had a layover in Philadelphia, and every time I go through the Philadelphia airport, I still think about this. I was trying to find a place where I could just sit down and start or just pecking out another sermon on my computer. And all the seats everywhere were taken, so I just, you know, plopped down on the floor. And I'm sitting on the floor just trying to redo my sermon in order to try to, because I knew, although we tried to get the word out electronically, I knew the next Sunday morning, many of the people who came to church wouldn't have even heard. And this is a well-known family in our church. And I was going to have to explain to our church family what had happened and then minister the word afterwards. And I knew what I had prepared up to that point wasn't going to work. So I'm cramming out a new sermon, communicating with my professional assistant and doing all the new PowerPoints and all that kind of stuff. It was really something. Got to church that Sunday morning, and when I announced what had happened to our church family, I mean, there was just this palatable gasp. I mean, the air just went out of the room. I mean, everybody was suffering now. And then I tried the very best I could to minister the word. It was one of those, there are days when you feel like you really earn your salary. I don't know if that makes any sense. I think it probably makes sense to the pastors in the room. That was one of those days. And it's also, and maybe that's not the best way to say it. Maybe the way to say it is, there's times when you really understand why God called you to be a pastor, and you get what pastoring really means. Because you have people who are absolutely devastated, and with the help of God, you're trying to help. So we got through those services and then spent some time with that man additionally that afternoon, starting to plan the funerals, of course, and also with his parents and with the parents of his wife who had perished. They had grown up together, so the parents knew each other well. They're from the same town. All